Okay, thank you. Yeah, first I want to thank Lee Han, and definitely he gave a very nice talk, and we have a very deep discussion about intermediate wheatgrass. And I also want to thank Lee for his pioneer work in intermediate wheatgrass breeding. I'm mainly focused on the breeding, so I just want to talk about our recent study using genomic selection to accelerate the domestication of intermediate wheatgrass. So first I want to thank my collaborators. So in University of Minnesota, we have a big group working on intermediate wheatgrass. Jim Madison is a breeder, and we have agronomist, and also we have plant pathologist, we have food scientist, so we are a big group working on developing intermediate wheatgrass and the perennial green crop, and definitely I always thank Dr. Lee Han. He kindly supplied breeding material so we can initiate our breeding program. And I also work with Dr. Jason Portland and also Steve Larson. He is there. We work on GBS, work on genetic map. I also want to thank Ahmed. He is there, and we work on genomic selection. And I also want to thank the USDA scientist, Dr. Ohm. We work on food quality test of intermediate wheatgrass. So just to briefly introduce intermediate wheatgrass, it's a perennial relative of wheat, and it's a yellow hexaploid, it's an outcrosser, it has a big genome. So it can be used for many things, but for us, we mainly focus on the green to use it for food. This figure showed the domestication history of intermediate wheatgrass. You can see it started in 1983 in Rodale Research Center, and after two cycles of selection in Rodale Research Center and three cycles of selection in the Land Institute, in 2011 with University of Minnesota, we started our breeding program. In the last 4 years, we finished two cycles of selection. So we the main breeding method is conventional breeding. So we just make selection based on phenotype. This is the trees we are focused on. And for conventional breeding, just to give an example, this is the breeding population where we have 100 families. And this 100 family is derived from 100 best plants from the last selection cycle. So in each family we have 100 plants. So totally we have 10,000 plants. So for conventional breeding, we need to plant all the 10,000 plants in the field, and we need to manage them, harvest them to measure the agronomic trees. It takes tons of time and a lot of labor. So we are thinking whether we can use genomic selection just to test a small population but maintain a high genetic gain for our breeding program. So just briefly introduce genomic selection. For genomic selection, we have to have a training population. For this training population, we plant them in the field. We collect the phenotype data, and also we collect genotype data. We put phenotype data on one side of the equation, the genotype data on the other side, so we can develop this kind of equation. Once we have this equation, we can just use the genotype data of the breeding population to predict the breeding value of the lines in the population. Then we can based on the predicted value to make selection. So this is the basic idea. The application of genomic selection, we rely on the genome-wide markers. The GBS is a good method. So actually, we use enzyme to cut the genome. Just only a very small part of the genome will be sequenced. And for GBS, it also use a barcode adapter. So once we ligate barcode adapter with the DNA fragment, we can mix different samples. So this is a good way to reduce the cost of the for genotyping. So just to go back to our study, this figure shows the how the plant material were organized in the field. So we have two blocks, block A, block B. In each block, we have 58 families. In each family, we have 10 plants. And the plants from the same family were planted near with each other in the field. So totally, we have about 1,000 plants for genomic selection study. And we use genotyping by sequencing to obtain genome-wide markers. So finally, based on this pipeline, we find 3,883 markers. They are good quality markers. They go through different kind of filters, and they have less than 30% missing data. So for the phenotype part, we collected data in 2 years, and we are focused on these 7 traits: head and date, height, biomass, green yield, thresh ability, head weight, and also seed weight. So in this slide, I just want to show you the correlation between the data from 2 years. This is the first year. The second year, you can see we have a high correlation. And for green yield, for seed weight, we have much higher correlation. For the other 5 trees, we have similar result. So we think maybe we can just make selection based on the first year data. And for genomic selection, you know, now we have genotype data, we have phenotype data, so we can test whether genomic selection can work in our breeding program. So we use 2 methods. One is cross validation. The other is independent validation. For cross validation, we divided the big breeding the big population into 2 parts. One part is 70%. We use it and the training set. The other part is 20%. We use it and the validation set. We develop equation based on the training set and to predict the breeding value of the validation set, and then we can calculate the correlation coefficient between the predicted value and the observed value of the validation set. So this is the y-axis is the correlation coefficient, and the x is 7 different trees. You can see for all trees, we obtained the predictive ability, and it is also the correlation coefficient is larger than 0.4. The median is larger than 0.45. So. And for the other method, we use independent validation. You know, our material is organized in 2 blocks. So we use 1 block, block A, and the training population, use the block B and the validation population. Or we can use B and training, use A and validation is the same thing. So you can see we get similar results between these two methods. And also you can compare the cross validation and in independent validation, you also can find the pattern is pretty similar. So the highest predictive ability is for seed weight, and the lowest is for biomass or head weight. They all are higher than 0.4. So this kind of result give us an idea. Maybe we can train a genomic selection model using a subset of our breeding population, and using this trained model to predict the other part, the remaining of the breeding population. So before we apply the genomic selection model, we need to optimize the composition of the training population. So first, we need to see how many families should be included in the training population. So we test different number of families here. This one is actually is from the cross validation. It's from this part. So just use it as a positive control. So you can see with the number increased, the predictive ability also increased. But you can see here we have a lot of variation. That means if we use all members from 50 families as the training set and to train a model to predict the breeding value of the other eight families, sometimes we get high predictive ability, sometimes we get very low predictive ability. So that means it is not stable. So based on this data, we think we need include all 58 families in the training population. So another question is how many number of member of genotype from each family should be included in the training population. So we also test different numbers of genotype from each family. Here is the from cross validation also, it's for positive control. So you can see once the number of genotype from each family reach to 8 or 10, you can see it reach predictive ability reach a plateau. So this data shows that maybe 8 or 10 genotypes from each family, each of 58 families, should be enough to achieve a high predictive ability. So another thing is to optimize the marker density. We also test the different number of markers. You can see here, from 40 to 3,200. And we have a similar curve. Once the number of markers larger than 1600, so the predictive ability reach a plateau. So we think maybe 1600 or thank you. Okay, thank you. So 1600 or 2000 markers should be good to capture the variation in the breeding population, and also we can achieve a high predictive ability. So based on the data in the above several slides, we propose a genomic selection based breeding scheme. Definitely this is just one of the breeding scheme. So for this breeding scheme, in our breeding program, we just need to plant a very small sub-population of the big breeding population. So here we have 100 families, and we plant 10 genotypes from each family. So totally, we only plant 1,000 plants, and we collect genotype data, and we develop genomic selection model. And also based on this small population, based on the phenotype, we determine the best families. So in the next step, we only focus on the best families, and we genotype them, and using the model to predict the breeding value, and then select the best plant to make cross produces for the next selection cycle. So in this way, we only need to manage only 1,000 plants in the field and 2,000 or 3,000 plants in the greenhouse. So we can make selection. So definitely it saves a lot of labor and time for our breeding program. So just to summarize the results, the GBS is a powerful method for intermediate wheatgrass. Even intermediate wheatgrass is hexaploid. It's outgrosser and without reference genome, so GBS works. and we obtained high predict ability for several different trees, and we optimized the training population size and the number of markers. So we believe genomic section will accelerate the domestication of intermediate wheatgrass. So that's all what I want to talk. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for coming.